Dan's Mathcast. Mathematics for the masses. Well, hey everybody, it's episode 26 of Dan's Mathcast. The 26th letter is Z, and the 26th prime is 101. So you could call this Math Podcasting 101, but it's really episode 26. Oh man. Episode 101, 26, January 29th, 2007. Remember my slogan, whether you're a math geek or a math phobic, stick with me. In a half hour, you'll be smarter. What's going on in this show? In this show, I'm going to bring you some news from Macworld and podcaster meetups I've been to. In Mathematics for the Masses, we're going to discuss the mathematics of tournaments and contests. In my chapter of the week, we're going to start out our trigonometry section. Reader and listener email will be read on DMQA. Our advanced topic is linear programming. We're going to have a little feature about math and your money, and of course, we always end with a math joke. So get ready. Dan's Tech News. Well, I was at Macworld in San Francisco, and we were all expecting some new Macintoshes and software, but what we got was an iPhone. Podcasting guru Leo Laporte, I talked to for a while, he said he expected an iPod without a phone by Valentine's Day. I was a little skeptical about that, so I went out and bought myself a video iPod immediately. Thanks, Leo. I enjoyed walking over from Macworld to the Mac break taping with Leo and his intern Shuby, and I got to buy Leo Laporte a pint. I was very proud. During Adam Christensen's panel discussion at the Apple Store on Thursday night, I met a guy named Michael Butler who asked me if I was a podcaster, and he invited me to the SF Podcasters meetup. I just went there yesterday. I got lost for a while wandering around San Francisco trying to find the meetup, but I did get to plug my show to an audience of about 50. And at the Mac Mingle at Macworld, I got to talk to Ken Ray, one of my hero podcasters, not to mention nice folks Todd and Teji. Well, okay, now I've mentioned them. And thanks, Adam Christensen, for playing my promo on the MacCast. Oh yeah, I think it's time to start the math portion of our show. Mathematics for the Masses. This time on Mathematics for the Masses, we discuss the math involved in tournaments and contests. We're going to look at three basic types. 1. A single elimination tournament. 2. A round-robin tournament. And 3. Seedings and rating points. Okay, that's not really a type of tournament, but it's a feature. A single elimination tournament is like a major tennis tournament or the NCAA basketball. The number of teams or players at the start is usually a power of 2. Let's take basketball as an example. There are 64 teams that start. They pair them up and there are 32 games. The winner of each game goes on to the next round. You keep playing until you lose. Eventually, the winner has beaten everybody they encounter. If you draw out the teams entered in the tournament or the players in a tennis tournament, it looks like a giant binary tree, and it's usually called the bracket. I'm watching the Australian Open right now. Tennis is one of my favorite sports. They have 7 rounds, and there are 2 to the 7th, or 128 players, to begin with, in each division, men's and women's singles. Let's figure out the number of women's singles matches there would be. Let's see, 128 players, there would be 64 first-round matches, there would be 32 second-round matches, 16 third-round matches, 8 fourth-round matches, 4 fifth-round matches, 2 sixth-round matches, and 1 finals match in the 7th round. If you add all those up, you get 127 matches. Well, an easier way would be to say, everybody's going to play until they lose. Each match has 1 winner and 1 loser. There are 127 losers and 1 winner in the tournament, therefore, 127 matches. Now there's the kind of argument I like. The second type of tournament we'll talk about is called a round-robin. This means every player plays every other player once. For example, in a Scrabble tournament, you might have 6 players entered and each one would play 5 games, one against each other player. Setting up a round-robin tournament was the subject of my Dan's Math Problem of the Week, number 255, a couple of months ago. You can check my archives at dansmath.com. I learned from my contestants on this problem that there's a well-known algorithm to generate a round-robin tournament. Nick McGrath told me he used to set up chess tournaments in this way. What you do is you pair up the players. If you have an even number, everybody will play every day. Let's say we have 1 plays 6, 2 plays 5, and 3 plays 4. Now for the next day's matches, you keep the 1 in the same place and rotate all the other numbers clockwise if you have them written in a rectangle. So the next day, 1 plays 5, 6 plays 4, and 2 plays 3. And the third day, 1 plays 4, 5 plays 3, and 6 plays 2. Keep rotating. The fourth day, 1 plays 3, 4 plays 2, and 5 plays 6. Rotate them one more time. And the fifth day, 1 plays 2, 3 plays 6, and 4 plays 5. You can check that each player has played every other player. Each player might get 1 point for a win, 0 points for a loss, and perhaps 0.5 points for a draw or a tie. At the end of the round robin, you see who has the most points, and that's your winner. If you have ties, that's a problem. Most tournaments have specific ways to break ties. One of my favorites is the NFL playoff picture. They have an intricate system of tiebreakers involving head-to-head contests, conference records, and even points scored in total opponents and against each other. Whew! Thirdly, let's talk about seedings and rating points. In the Scrabble tournament example of 6 players, I had 1 playing 6, 2 playing 5, and 3 playing 4. That's the way you usually do it if players or teams are ranked before coming into the playoffs or the tournament. In National Basketball Association playoffs, 1 plays 8, 2 plays 7, 3 plays 6, and 4 plays 5. They've earned those seeded positions throughout the regular season by their win and loss records. Tennis players and chess players also have ratings points, a whole rating system where you get a certain number of points for winning a match or losing a match, and it also depends on the relative rating of your opponent. If you beat a stronger player, you gain more points than if you beat a weaker player. Well, that's a brief look at contests and tournaments. Now here's a little something to think about that we'll answer on the next show. Challenge problem for next time. Suppose you have 16 teams in a single elimination tournament. First of all, how many ways are there of setting up the opening round? Next, for each setup, how many possible tournament outcomes are there? And finally, how would you set up a round-robin tournament if you had only 5 Scrabble players? I'll have the answer on the next show. Challenge problem from last time. Evaluate the quantity 1 plus 1 tenth to the tenth and 1 plus 1 100th to the 100 and compare that with the value of e. Remember we expressed e as the limit of 1 plus 1 over n quantity to the power n. With n equals 10, we get 1 plus a tenth to the tenth. 1.1 to the tenth is about 2.5937. With n equals 100, 1 plus 1 100th to the 100 is 1.01 to the 100, and that's about 2.7048. Now e is about 2.71828, so we can see these values are getting pretty close. 2. Expand out 1 plus 1 fourth quantity to the fourth and 1 plus 1 sixth quantity to the sixth using the binomial theorem. Compare your expanded answer with the reciprocal factorial series. The binomial theorem is a formula for quantity a plus b raised to the nth power. We have 1 plus 1 fourth raised to the 4. That's 1 to the fourth plus 4 times 1 cubed times 1 fourth plus 6 times 1 squared times 1 fourth squared plus 4 times 1 times 1 fourth cubed plus 1 fourth to the fourth. That makes 1 plus 1 plus 3 eighths plus 1 sixteenth plus 1 256th. That's 2 and 113 256ths, which is about 2.441. Now, 1 plus 1 sixth raised to the sixth is going to be, I'll simplify, 1 plus 1 plus 5 twelfths plus 5 54ths plus 5 432nds plus 1 over 1296 plus finally 1 over 46656. Anyways, you can compare each of those terms with 1 plus 1 plus a half plus a sixth plus a 24th and so on, the inverses of the factorials. After the first couple of terms, they actually approach those factorial inverses term by term. Well, it's kind of complicated. You should write it out and see. Well, we'll be back on the next show with Mathematics for the Masses. Now it's time for our regular feature, Dan's Chapter of the Week. Well, on the first 25 shows, we went through topics in arithmetic, pre-algebra, beginning and intermediate algebra, a little geometry, and today it's time to start trigonometry. The word trigonometry, of course, means measuring trigons. Well, that's polygons with 3 sides. We know them as triangles. Now, I was looking around my house for a trigonometry book. I couldn't find a modern textbook. I went to my local library and found Trigonometry the Easy Way by Behrens. We'll use that a little bit. I also found a couple of old books called Plane and Spherical Trigonometry in my secret cabinet. One is from 1942, the other one's from 1906. I said they were old. But the content doesn't change over the years. Maybe the style of presentation does. So let's start with Chapter 1, Right Triangles, Similar Triangles, and the Basic Trig Ratios. Section 1.1, Right Triangles. No, there aren't any left triangles. A right triangle is one with a right angle. One of the angles is 90 degrees. Now, as a convention, let's put the base of the triangle horizontal, the right angle on the right, and the vertical side on the right side. The third side is called the hypotenuse, and the base and the height are called the legs. Now, from the Pythagorean theorem, we've been over this. A squared plus B squared, the base squared plus the height squared, is equal to C squared, the hypotenuse squared. Since the three angles of any triangle add up to 180 degrees, the non-right angles of a right triangle add up to 90 degrees, because the other 90 is the right angle. So if one angle is 20 degrees, the other angle is going to be 70 degrees, and the third angle is 90 degrees. A famous triangle is a 45-degree, 45-degree, 90-degree triangle, or 45, 45, 90. That's like a square cut in half diagonally. Another one is 30, 60, 90. That's really half of an equilateral triangle. So we'll encounter these later. Section 1.2, Similar Triangles. Similar triangles are two triangles that have the same shape. They're like scale models of each other. Now, we talked about this a little bit in one of the previous geometry sections. If the three corresponding angles of two triangles are equal, then those triangles are similar. For example, if they have angles of 20 degrees, 70 degrees, and 90 degrees, then no matter what their size, they're the same shape. An important property of triangles of the same shape is that their corresponding sides are proportional. You know, if the triangle is three times as big as the other triangle, then each side is three times as big as the corresponding smaller side on the other triangle. Got it? So for an example, if two right triangles are similar, let's put their bases and their vertical sides in the same orientation, and that means that the diagonal side is kind of going in the same direction in both triangles. Then, for example, the ratio of the height to the base in each triangle is the same. In fact, the rise over the run is called the slope of that diagonal line. Remember, we can use this proportion to solve triangles. To measure the height of a tall cell phone tower, for example, without climbing it, because that's dangerous, we could stand near it, measure our own height, measure our own shadow, and measure the shadow of the cell phone tower, then use similar triangles. So imagine me, Dan, your 6-foot-tall podcaster, casting a 5-foot shadow. I look near myself, and I see a 150-foot-long shadow for the cell phone tower. How tall is the tower? Well, let's call the height h, and we've got h divided by 150 is equal to 6 divided by 5. That's really the height divided by the shadow in both cases. Now, when we solve h over 150 equals 6 over 5, and multiplying both sides by 150, we get h equals 180 feet. Notice that this ratio, height divided by base, only depends on the angle of inclination, not the size of the triangle. Other ratios we could do would be the base divided by the hypotenuse, or the height divided by the hypotenuse. We're going to give these names in a minute. Section 1.3, the basic trig ratios. Well, let's set up our right triangle with a horizontal base, a vertical side on the right, and on the lower left we'll call that the angle of inclination. Usually that's denoted with the Greek letter theta, which is like a little O with a line across the middle. Now that means the other acute angle in the right triangle is going to have a measurement of 90 degrees minus theta. Those are called complementary angles. Anyways, let's suppose that we look at the ratio of the height over the base. We saw that that only depends on the angle. That particular ratio is actually called the tangent of the angle. It's the opposite side divided by the adjacent side to the angle. In our cell phone shadow tower thing example, my height was 6 feet and my shadow length was 5 feet. So the tangent of that angle of inclination would be 6 over 5, or 1.2. Now, in our triangle, if we divide the height by the hypotenuse, we get a ratio called the sine of theta, the sine of the angle. That's opposite over hypotenuse. Now, if we measure the base and divide by the hypotenuse, that's called the cosine of the angle. So here's what we've got. The sine is the opposite over the hypotenuse, SOH. The cosine is the adjacent over the hypotenuse, CAH. And the tangent is the opposite over adjacent, TOA. What's that spell? SOHCAHTOA. Section 1.4, Solving Right Triangles. This means you know some of the parts, the sides and the angles of a right triangle, and you want to figure out all the other ones. Since you know there's a 90-degree angle, you need two other parts, and then you can figure out the remaining three. If you know two sides, use the Pythagorean theorem to find the third side. If you know all three angles, well, you won't be able to solve it because you don't know what size it is. But if you know at least one side and at least one angle besides the right angle, you can do it. Pick the ratio, sine, cosine, or tangent, that involves the side you know and the side you want to know. Then figure out the sine, cosine, or tangent of that angle using a calculator and set up a proportion, solve for the side that you don't know. So let's look at a quick example. You're out in a strong wind flying a kite. You've let out 250 meters of string, and the string makes a 10-degree angle with the ground. How high off the ground is the kite? So you draw a little triangle, you've got a 10-degree angle of elevation, and the hypotenuse is 250 meters. You want the opposite side, h. So you use the sine. Sine of 10 degrees equals h divided by 250. That means h equals 250 times sine of 10 degrees. Now, sine of 10 degrees is 0.1736 about, so h is 250 times that, and you get about 43.4 meters. There's your answer. Well, that's about it for our first trigonometry chapter. Join me next time on Dan's Chapter of the Week. Homework problem for next time. Don't be afraid to draw a little picture and work on this one. The Pentagon Building in Washington, D.C. is a regular five-sided pentagon with side length 489 feet. First of all, what's its total area in square feet? Second of all, how many acres is that if there are 640 acres in a square mile and 5,280 feet in a mile? As usual, we'll have the answer for you on the next show. Homework problem from last time. 1. Solve for x. 5 to the power 2x plus 3 equals 11. Since our variable is up in the exponent, let's take log of both sides. It could be any base. Let's use base 10. Log of 5 to the 2x plus 3 equals log of 11. Now use the power rule. 2x plus 3 times log 5 equals log 11. So 2x plus 3 equals log 11 divided by log of 5, and 2x is equal to log 11 minus 3 log 5, all divided by log 5. Approximate log 11 by 1.0414 and log 5 by 0.699, and we get x as about negative 0.755. Now this gives 2x plus 3 equals 1.49, and 5 to the 1.49 is just about 11. How about that? Question 2. If the world's population was 6 billion in 1999 and will hit 7 billion in 2013, what is the average annual percentage increase over this period of the Earth's population? Well, the word average is kind of a touchy subject. You could figure out that going from 6 billion to 7 billion, well, 7 divided by 6 is 1.167, that's a growth of 16.7% in 14 years. 16.7 divided by 14 years would be 1.19% per year. But that's really incorrect, because with yearly compounding, that would be too much growth. Here's how to look at it. Set up A equals PE to the RT. A is 7 billion. P is 6 billion to start with, and T is equal to 14 years. So you get 7 equals 6 e to the 14r. E to the 14r is 1.1667, and so 14r is ln of 1.1667, which is about 0.154. You divide to solve for r, and you get r equals 0.0110, and so r is equal to 1.10%. Thanks, PERT formula. You've been helpful. It's time for DMQA, Dan's Math Questions Answers. Once again, the lovely and talented Patty Leitner will read an email question. Patty?
Thanks, Dan. But when do I get to do more than just read these questions? On Thursday, November 16th, 2006, Pooja wrote, "Hi, Dan, can you explain to me how to solve this equation? If 30 is 20% of a number, then that number is what percent of 30? I'm not bad in math, but I'm not able to find this one. Thanks, Pooja."
Well, okay, Pooja. That's a good question. It's interesting. I let n equal the unknown number, so 30 equals 20% of n. That means 30 equals 0.20n, or n equals 30 over 0.20. That's 150. Now, that number is what percent of 30? Well, 150 divided by 30 is 5. That's 500%. Thanks. And Patty, or really any listener, you can submit an MP3 on any subject you want. We'll pass it by our editorial staff and maybe put it on a future show. Just email it to podcast@dansmath.com. Math and Your Money. Well, here are a few thousand reasons to stay in school or go back to school. A bachelor's degree is an undergraduate degree. It takes about 4 or 5 years of college after high school. Average starting salary, according to the 2006 census figures, $28,000 without a bachelor's degree, $51,000 with a bachelor's degree, and $78,000 with an advanced degree like a PhD, an MA, or an MBA, or an MD. You're going to be hanging around anyway the next couple of decades. Might as well pull in a few million dollars while you're at it. On future shows, I'll have some salary figures related to specific majors and, of course, mathematical subjects, so stay tuned. Listener feedback. Here's a comment submitted by Wichard at Podcast Alley about Dan's MathCast. He says, "It's great, but so fast. It's really good to hear all the things that we should still know. Dan should just think of his fans in the non-English world." Well, thanks, Wichard. I've been trying to slow my pace down a little bit. I am from New York, and I think on the last show I had a cold mochaccino next to me. I'll have to watch out for that in the future. Advanced topic of the week. Remember, you can check my blog at dansmath.libsyn.com, L-I-B-S-Y-N, for show notes on past shows. You can look up the advanced topics, the chapter of the week, and so on. This time, let's do a couple of interesting optimization problems using something called linear programming. Now, this involves linear equations and inequalities to define regions in the xy plane. Here's an example. Say you're a fruit grower and you're packing bags of fruit to sell at the farmer's market. You pack apples and oranges into a bag with the following restrictions. Each bag is maximum 20 pounds. You have to have between 4 and 16 pounds of apples inclusive, and you can have at most 3 times as many oranges as apples. If the profit on a pound of apples is a dime and on a pound of oranges is a quarter, how do we make the most money on a bag of fruit? Well, that's a lot to digest, so we'll go through the information again. Let's let x equal the number of pounds of apples and y equal the number of pounds of oranges. Maximum 20 pounds means x plus y is less than or equal to 20. Between 4 and 16 pounds of apples means x is greater than or equal to 4 and x is less than or equal to 16. And at most 3 times as many oranges as apples means that y is less than or equal to 3x. Now we assume y is greater than or equal to 0 and we graph all of these inequalities. We graph the lines and shade in a certain direction. We've done that on a previous show. What you get is a pentagon with corners at 4, 0, 16, 0, and then up along the line x plus y equals 20, we have 16, 4, and 5, 15. Over on the left-hand side, we have 4, 12 for the vertical line x equals 4. I'd really suggest grabbing a little graph paper and drawing this one. Okay, let's find the profit function. Now, the total profit per bag in pennies is 10x plus 25y, because a dime is 10 cents and a quarter is 25. What you do is you find the values of 10x plus 25y, I'll call it P for profit, at each corner of your region. At 4, 0, the profit is 40. At 4, 12, the profit is 340. At 5, 15, the profit is 425. At 16, 4, the profit is 260. And at 16, 0, the profit is only 160. So the winning location is 5, 15. This means 5 pounds of apples and 15 pounds of oranges will net you a profit of $4.25 a bag. The next farmer that tells me they don't need algebra, I'm going to recite this example. The secret of linear programming is to take a look at the profit 10x plus 25y and think of it as the graph of a line 10x plus 25y equals a constant. Now the direction or slope of that line will determine which corner of the region it's going to hit first, and that location is the xy pair that wins. In our case, it was 10x plus 25y equals 425 that hit the region to the furthest upper right point, 5, 15. Challenge problem for next time. If the profits change to a quarter on a pound of apples and a dime on a pound of oranges, then what's the maximum profit and how do you arrange the bag? As always, we'll have the answer for you on the next show. And I'd just like to give special thanks to my good friends Jeff Walensky and Jim Moran for continually downloading and subscribing to my show. That's all you have to do to get your name mentioned. Just know me for a couple of decades and stay on my good side.
Math joke of the week.
In the Truth is Funnier Than Fiction department, Apropos of the last show when we were talking about cryptography, Bill Gates came out and said one of the most important challenges in the next 20 years will be factoring large primes. If you like that, you'll like that it was mentioned on CNN that the new prime number discovered recently was 4 times larger than the previous record. I'll just let you think about those. Well, that is going to do it for us here on episode 26 of Dan's MathCast. Remember, you can do lots of things to support the show. You can vote for me at podcastalley.com, leave a comment in iTunes, tell lots of your friends and teachers and students that you listen to the show, explain to them what a podcast is. You can even enter some forums and discussion groups and just drop my name. Say you listen to the show and it's helped you immensely, or at least amused you for a few minutes. Stop by dansmath.com for math lessons, show notes, and a weekly contest problem. And remember, whatever you do, you can do it a little bit better if you know some math. So be sure to come back and join us next time on Dan's MathCast.